apologies to the people that are here. This is the General Government Subcommittee. It is Thursday, April the 14th. Anne-Marie, are you ready to go? All right, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 5501, the Department of Administrative Services. Welcome the co-chair, who is creating our quorum. And Dallas, I'd like you to go over the memorandum that you have at everyone's seat, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you, Mr. Co-chair, for getting us started with the quorum. First thing is, remember, yesterday I gave you a memorandum. Today I followed up with additional staff recommendations. So what you will see on this memorandum is the recommendations for the areas that we're going to cover today, followed by those areas that we have completed. Now, we may not, I expect we're not going to cover all of what I've got in here today, those that have been approved are indicated on your memorandum. Also, we've attached the orbits.
By approved, you mean those items that the committee acted on yesterday,
yes.
And we have now set aside waiting the completion of
that
the entire
correct,
budget.
That is correct, Madam Chair. And on the right-hand side of the column, it's the action that had been approved by the subcommittee.
Thank you.
Then we have what's called the orbits printout, which reflects the staff recommendations and the impact on the agency's budget request, followed by the list of performance measures, the summary schedule, and you will see that the summary schedule, there's performance measures that have horizontal diagonal lines through them. Those are the ones that were approved to be deleted. And those that are shaded that are those that the committee approved. And so as we go forward and approve or delete or add, you'll see more and more of that so that we'll finally complete the entire list of performance measures.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, there being none, I'm going to ask the professional staff to comment as well on the issue of non-limited, and if you'd go ahead,
sure. You know, many of the recommendations I made to you is to move from non-limited expenditure authority to expenditure limitation, which this, then if they exceed it, thank you, sir, they would have to come back and approve, receive legislative approval either through this body or the emergency board to increase expenditure limitation. For purposes of discussion, I just wanted to show you that.
What we're probably going to end up doing is so when we get ready to work pieces of this, maybe we'll have that. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. For example, the Department of Administrative Services budget bill, Senate Bill 5501, has
yes, sir.
About 40 lines of the bill that specifically exclude certain types of expenditures from limitation. The budget bill itself provides limitation and for the balance of its budget, and it's very, very short. And so what we are trying to do is remove parts of these, many of these exclusions from expenditure limitations. So what you will see ultimately in an A and gross version, if you approve moving from non-limited to limited, is a much shorter budget bill with fewer specific exclusions in the budget bill itself. So when you, it's a long laundry list, and I say that in no disrespect to the department. It has a lot of different operating type of units, so the exclusions are for specific types of expenditures, as is the case with all the other budget bills. It's just that the Department of Administrative Services, with its diversity of, and myriad of services that it provides, just has a longer laundry list than most other agencies.
And Dallas, if you don't mind, as a courtesy to the director of the department, I would invite her to come to the table and just comment on this. Some of the other directors and budgets that we have heard have at least voiced their opinion about the switch from non-limited to limited, and I invite that comment from you. I'm not sure that it will change the LFO recommendation or change the opinion of the panel, but I invite your comment.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lori Warner, the Acting Director for Department of Administrative Services. We have worked closely with Dallas to take a look at this move within the department, and I think that for the most part, we are not thinking that we can't manage it as limited. except in the risk management division where we have issues with claims that come in and have to be paid, and that is something that is not very predictable. There is a sort of certain level of expenditure that has gone on in the other program areas that we're comfortable that we probably are fine managing within it as limited expenditure. What I would say is if we have instances that we haven't foreseen or issues that come up during the biennium, what will happen is if we need more expenditure limitation, we will simply come back to an e-board. And as long as the emergency board is comfortable with that procedure, where we would then have a discussion about what those factors are that have led to a need for increased expenditure limitation, then I think that that's appropriate and would be fine.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the director? I just wanted to give you an opportunity to get on the record with any comments.
And I would say, you know, agencies would always probably prefer to operate with non-limited, where we can simply work with budget management to, by letter and notice to LFO, increase the expenditure limitation. But if it's the desire of the body to have more conversation about that, I think that's simply what we're moving towards.
Thank you.
With this change.
Thank you. Any other comments? I may have interrupted you mid-explanation.
Nope.
All right. Then we are going to begin working through the memorandum, and what we will do is, in the absence of a quorum, we will hear the presentations, have the opportunity for the panel discussion, and then in order to conduct any business, we'll stand at ease briefly, and I'll go out and get the co-chair, and then we'll be able to operate. So with that, Dr. Goldberg, we'll invite you up and try to do the Office for Health Policy and Research this morning. Where we left off yesterday, some questions had been raised about the position, specifically limited duration moving to permanent, and I think you were prepared to comment on that.
Absolutely. For the record, Bruce Goldberg, Administrator of the Office for Oregon Health Policy and Research. Good morning. Let me briefly comment about there are three positions that we were seeking to move from limited duration to permanent status. One position is a 0.75 medical director for the Health Services Commission. The Health Services Commission, as you know, establishes the prioritized list for the Oregon Health Plan, has been in existence for 10 years. The commission's work saves the state about $45 million a year. They have had a medical director for the last 10 years of its existence, and that has been a limited duration position. We have always funded it. It's critical to the work of the Health Services Commission. And in recognition of the critical nature of the position, the need to have a position that we can recruit someone into, and the fact that we have continued to fund that position for the last 10 years, that's the basis of our request to move that position to a permanent position.
Dr. Goldberg, has it been the same advisor for the last 10 years?
No. Madam Chair, it has not. We have had two individuals. There was an individual for about the last 6 or 7 years, and now there is a different physician for the last 2 years.
Okay, do you want to move on to the description of the others, and then we'll come back
sure.
after you discuss them and have questions.
The other two positions relate to two functions that the office was given by the last legislature. The last legislature established the Oregon Health Policy Commission, and the last legislature established the Oregon Prescription Drug Program. Both of those programs, one of those positions is the director of the Oregon Prescription Drug Program, Missy Dolan, and the other is an assistant, an administrative assistant in the Oregon Health Policy Commission. These are functions of the office. We need to be able to have the positions to carry out these functions, and therefore the request to have these positions be permanent positions, I believe, reflecting what was, I think, the intent to have the office carry out these programs. Certainly, if it were the legislator's intent to do away with the prescription drug program, that position would be eliminated, but it just seemed that this was a way of having staffing fall in line with the programmatic responsibilities of the office.
Where is the principal source of revenue for this position?
The principal source of revenue for the prescription drug program is within the budgetary appropriation for that program.
Okay. And then there's a third.
The third is the administrative assistant for the Health Policy Commission.
Do you know the job classification for the medical director?
Madam Chair, I do not, but maybe Cora does.
Madam Director, I believe that it's a PEMS or G. It's a fairly high-level classification.
Okay. Senator Morse.
Madam Chair, I think it would be well to advise the committee of a bill that has, I think, very strong support, and it has to do with developing standardized architecture for the transmission of electronic health records between provider organizations. And this is a I don't want to lobby the bill, but
go ahead.
But it's a very important piece of this issue of how do we control the costs of health care. And standardized health care records that are electronically transmitted has the potential of some very, very significant cost savings. This will reside in this bill. It will reside in the Health Policy Office. And the staffing function, which heretofore has been voluntary, in the subcommittee that has been performing the work and investigating this issue, will be staffed by the agency with redirected funds. So, maybe if you could speak to that, Dr. Goldberg, because I believe the bill will gain some traction and will come out of the assembly.
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, the bill that Senator Morse is referring to, Senate Bill 541, I believe is an important bill in terms of looking to help establish an electronic medical record network across the state, a really important strategy to help control health care costs. That's been a priority of the Health Policy Commission. They had a task force that put together some recommendations, and part of those recommendations are contained in the bill. I've been working with Senator Morris and with other stakeholders to look at how we could provide, in essence, some staffing for what would be one year for this position to have a task force, move this issue, try and actually do what we've been very successful at, which is garner outside support from federal government and others. I believe that we can do that. We have some dollars in our budget that are allocated towards benchmark rate setting for the Oregon Health Plan. And this is the second time we're going to be doing that. And I've been talking with the actuaries who did that the first time and looking at the budget, and I'm confident that we can look to redirect some of the funds that we had allocated in our budget for that actuarial work, still be able to accomplish that actuarial work that's part of the Health Services Commission, and use some of those funds to fund this position for the 1 year. The issue would then be, hopefully, we would be betting that we can look to establish some grant funding and some other sources to continue some of those efforts. We've been successful at doing that.
Any other questions? Senator Morse, may I interrupt you, sir, before you start?
Sure.
If we're moving in the direction of being able to work this budget, I'm going to excuse myself, ask Senator Morse to finish this portion of the hearing and go get the co-chair. Is that...
Or did you want to wait until we do all three and then just get in and bang, bang, bang?
That's fine. Please continue.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to refer to the position for the drug purchasing program, which was put in place by the last legislative, by the last legislature, bipartisan support, and is currently operating and continuing to enroll people in light of the recent survey by AARP with prescription drugs, name brand drugs, increasing another 7% as last year. That is a very important program. And so the position that is, has been funded as a temporary needs to be funded as a permanent. This has very strong support from the governor and the legislature, because we did pass another bill to acknowledge that the program has been successful. So I just wanted to...
And Madam Chair, Senator Moore said that bill was passed unanimously by both chambers last session.
Yeah, it was.
Has
it
strong
was
support.
Yeah.
All right, there being no other questions, I'm going to ask Legislative Fiscal for their recommendations.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have before you our recommendations with respect to this budget. And we're recommending approval of the governor's recommended budget, which includes those policy option packages. We've provided additional funding to the e-board in the past, and this is a continuation of that and acknowledging their workload. We're also recommending a reduction of the general fund of $2,294 through the PERS rate adjustment. They have some general fund positions in emergency. Reduce other funds by $14,571 for the PERS rate reduction and another $375 for the AG rate reduction.
And does this, Dallas, reflect the 111
yes,
or?
Yes, Madam Chair. Okay. This reflects the $8 per hour reduction that was worked in the Public Safety Subcommittee. Now, subsequent to the development of the budget, the department has come forward with an additional request saying they anticipate soliciting donation dollars to help provide education and disseminate information about the upcoming benefits, the processes, and the like. Correct me if I'm mistaken here, for the new Medicare prescription drug program, and they are asking for they've asked for additional limitation in the event that they receive those additional donated funds. So we are recommending an increase in expenditure limitation of $75,000 in the event they receive that, and we know that the money can't be spent unless they receive it. They could then use the money for services or some temporary position or administratively bring on board someone to help with this educational experience. Work that would be begun and completed long before the end of the biennium. So we're recommending that approval.
I think this is an appropriate time to acknowledge on the record the very serious work that Dr. Goldberg's shop does, and the fact that you now are reduced to having to hunt for the charity of the feds and the charity of the philanthropic community to discharge this important planning work, against which many other programmatic decisions are being made. And I just want to publicly thank you for the amount of work that you're doing hunting for dollars to support your mission. We see a lot of money for planning pass through a lot of organizations, and it seems, given the gravity of the work that you do, that we're pretty parsimonious with this important office, and thank you for your initiative in hunting for additional funds.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, we cannot act on this.
Right. Well, our last recommendation is that the division work during the interim to develop one or two key performance measures and return to the audit committee with that by August of 06.
Madam Chair, we're doing that right now.
Thank you very much. Awaiting the arrival of the co-chair, we'll ask that you step down and invite up at this point the Public Employees Benefit Board, Ms. Thorne.
Madam Chair, Jean Thorne, Administrator of the Public Employees Benefit Board. Did you want me to discuss wellness services?
Let me just set the stage for this. I've had a couple of conversations with the staff as well as Ms. Thorne about the possibility of looking at reductions in the wellness program. And I think from the chair's perspective, what this boils down to is we have a finite amount of money to deal with respect to the Department of Administrative Services. We have, and I tried to chat with Ms. Thorne, this is no comment on the value of these programs. It's simply that we have a wellness program, we have cybersecurity, and a finite amount of money in figuring out where to allocate it. Needless to say, Ms. Thorne wants to bring to the attention of the panel the benefits conferred by the wellness program, and I have afforded the opportunity for her to make the presentation to the panel before we make any decisions with respect to the LFO recommendations. So against that backdrop, is that a fair assessment?
Yes, it is. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I do understand if you do have packets, which were responses to questions raised, there is a document in your packet around PEB wellness programs. When I was here last week, there were some questions about the origins of the program, rationale, and also utilization. Actually, prior to PEB ever being formed, as you know, there were two previous boards, the State Employees Benefit Board and the Bargaining Units Benefit Board. Both of them had some elements of wellness activities. And as PEB was formed and came together, and especially as the board has been looking at its long-term vision in terms of how do we get a better handle in controlling health care costs for state employees, there are a number of elements and actually demands we are making of the healthcare delivery system to make some changes. But at the same time, much of what occurs in terms of healthcare costs can be reduced or avoided by actions that members take in their own lifestyle. So it's not just an issue of what the doctor does to you, it's also what you may do, what choices you may make for yourself. So the board, about 2 or 3 years ago, really put together more of a comprehensive program to try to deal with assisting state employees in making choices, in dealing with issues around either chronic diseases or risk factors that potentially could lead to chronic diseases. And so we have had, as part of the premiums, actually, that are paid to our medical plans, $2.55 per employee per month, and that's been for the last several years. The rationale behind the program really is we would relate to an 80-20 rule. At any given time, 20% of members contribute or make up 80% of the medical costs. And the goal of these programs is to try to keep people from becoming one of those 20%. To either deal with risk factors at the front end, or if they have chronic diseases, to try to take actions to better manage those chronic diseases so we can reduce medical costs. We had, in 2003, we identified that about 10% of current PEB members already have been diagnosed with one or more of the following chronic diseases: asthma, diabetes, coronary artery disease, and congestive heart failure. And we're trying to deal with some of those issues at the front. And the approach really is to pool the dollars in essence, to have services available, because to the degree people aren't able to manage some of their risk factors, it drives up premium costs for everyone. So it really is a social insurance concept. Businesses nationally are moving more and more towards having these programs because they recognize you need to get ahead of the curve if you're going to try to deal in the long term with health care costs. The National Business Group on Health represents the top 220 of the nation's companies. They have reported that almost all large employers and more than 80% of small employers now have some activities, some form of health promotion or prevention programs. There have been thousands of studies that look at return on investment, whether it's in terms of medical costs or absenteeism. And they had, in 2001, researchers conducted a comprehensive review of the literature. There have been individual studies done on numerous companies who have found a return on investment for employee wellness programs ranges from $1.09 to $4.07 for every dollar invested, depending on the scope of the program, depending on whether you're only looking at medical costs or you're also looking at absenteeism. PEB has a number, I think, you know, people think of the health clinic across the street as being the health program or the wellness program. Actually, the staff from there, and this has been in the last 2 years, support screenings, health education classes throughout the state. And so, for instance, last year there were 83 on-site agency screenings were attended by almost 2,000 members. Screenings include looking at blood pressure, body mass index, cholesterol levels, glucose levels, nurse practitioners, then consult with the participants to review the results, to work with them on plans, and in many cases they are not hooked up with a primary care provider, and so work with them, and this is especially true in Eastern Oregon, we found, in trying to connect them with a primary care provider so they can deal with their risks. We began late last year and early this year collecting data on the health risks, the aggregate data on health risks that are shown in the people who are attending health screenings. For the first quarter of this year, for instance, more than 80% report at least one health risk. Over 66% are overweight. 20% of those are obese. More than 50% have high cholesterol. We have health education classes that emphasize skill building and behavior change related to asthma, diabetes, heart disease, smoking, pregnancy, depression, nutrition, weight, and physical fitness. Last year, 118 health education classes were held around the state. Were attended by more than 1,000 members. We have them at lunch hours. We have them immediately after work and are seeing more and more people attending these classes. The health center itself has moved away from being a place to have episodic care to focus on wellness and supporting and identifying people who have risks, developing plans with them, getting them hooked up with primary care. And so last year they had appointments of 1,536 members. Almost a quarter of them had a chronic disease or high-risk related diagnosis. They did almost 3,000 phone consultations as well. We have online health tools that allow our members to do a health risk assessment. It also allows them then to access information about their health risk, steps to help them improve their health. To date, we have had 5,300 members who are registered. When we look at the aggregate data, more than a third of them are at risk of developing a chronic disease within the next 5 years. So, again, trying to get ahead of the curve and help people deal with those issues. We have a quarterly newsletter. We coordinate work with, we have agency wellness coordinators who have been identified in some of the larger agencies. We meet with them on a quarterly basis to share information with them. Last summer, we had a walking well pilot program where we quickly tried to see what could we do around a physical activity program. And so there were a number of agencies, primarily in Salem, but also Snake River, who participated. We had over 600 employees. Part of that, they received a pedometer, but they had to do a pre- and post survey. The survey was developed along with DHS Public Health to really look at how this may affect people. More than 80% of the participants reported that they had increased their physical activity as a result of this.
Director Thorne, may I interrupt you for just a moment? When you say that it's done in consultation with public health at DHS, how duplicative then is this effort versus what public health does? Because I know my public health folks at home have wellness outreach and wellness initiative. There seems to be the distinct possibility of duplication here.
Madam Chair, one of the things that the DHS Public Health, one of their federal grants from Centers for Disease Control, is around worksite-based programs and promoting healthy worksite initiatives with public and private employers.
But isn't that exactly what you're doing?
And so they are working, they're using some of their federal grant funds to help support, for instance, not on the survey, well, actually a survey that's being conducted right now is actually financed through that. There's 2,000 PEB members being a sampling, being surveyed to determine what the health risks are, how that affects absenteeism, productivity at work, what their utilization awareness is of wellness activities. This will also serve as a baseline for us as we're moving through the implementation of our vision. So public health has been helpful to us in designing, as an employer, I would say, in designing, for instance, questionnaires that allow us to get at what some of the underlying risk factors are. Lastly, we began, as of January this year, a tobacco cessation program for members who wish to quit smoking. It's operated through the Free and Clear program, which also operates the Oregon Quit Line, but it's much more extensive. It's outbound counseling. There are toolkits, nicotine replacement therapy. Since the beginning of the year, we have 199 members as of early this week who've enrolled, just 50 this month already. Just had a call from the Wall Street Journal earlier this week because they're doing a story on employer adoption of tobacco cessation programs. Really focusing on this because smokers are seeing overall, we don't know specifically in the PEB population, but have 40% higher health care costs. Again, if we can decrease smoking and provide the supports to people to do that, we believe in the long run all of these contribute to helping us get better control of health care costs.
Jean, are there not, though, all sorts of other opportunities for people that sincerely wish to stop smoking? They can go to their private physician. They can go to quit lines. They can go to all sorts of other venues to do that, can they not?
Madam Chair, in terms of this particular program, it's been shown to be twice as effective. The studies have been done twice as effective as just accessing a quit line. Nicotine replacement therapy, for instance, Regents Blue Cross does not cover that. And so for those who want to have more intensive assistance, it's not available to them through the current insurance. And so this was really an attempt to try to provide something that was more effective and that or had much greater chances of really being effective in assisting people to quit smoking. The board has asked the medical vendors who have proposed to look at certain issues or certain issues and activities that we are currently paying for that we think potentially are more important to be integrated more directly with primary care, so such as health risk assessments. And so we've asked those medical proposers to tell us what they can do around those areas. As we are looking at those medical proposals, the board had planned to reassess how we can get the most effective services to employees throughout the state. We do have employees throughout the state. And to go out for an RFP for services beginning in January. I guess I'd just like to close again in terms of the board's vision, which has been really the kind of the key long-term strategic view of how to get a handle of healthcare costs. I think we all feel like we're victims in many ways of having increasing costs. And so we are asking the healthcare delivery system to make a number of changes around what they do, how they do it, to focus on outcomes, to focus on evidence-based care. But a key piece of that, and that we hear, not only do we know from national studies, but that we hear from the medical provider community, too, is what can you do to help people before they ever arrive at my office? And so this is really our attempt. We've seen, again, the national studies show return on investment for these. It's a comprehensive program that we feel is important piece of our long-term vision.
Representative Smith first, then Senator Morris, then Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
I almost feel compelled to jump in.
Yeah. And then Representative O'Rourke.
No.
First of all, let me say good morning and how much I enjoy reading the newsletter when we receive it. I think it's very well done.
Thank you.
Is there a strategic plan that you folks operate off of in terms of recognizing what the problems are and then having a set of tools to address those? And is it possible to get a copy?
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, we have our broader strategic plan, which we call our vision for 2007, and that's been included in actually the phase one document. We also have a work plan around wellness. We have a work plan around chronic disease management. One of the things we're doing right now is with federal funds, there is a scientifically valid survey being conducted of PEB members to really get a better understanding
understanding of the underlying risk factors that we're dealing with. And so there are, we have our larger strategic plan that's been included in the initial information, and then we have our wellness work plan, and then that's being amended as we move along, as we gather more information.
What I'm trying to figure out is let's take smoking. I think we can all acknowledge that smoking is an issue that costs everyone money. What I'm curious about is rather than just acknowledging it and saying here's some good programs, do we have a systematic approach that says here's where we are today, here's where we want to be, here's the approach we're going to take to get there, here's what it costs us today, here's what we think it's going to cost us tomorrow, here's the steps. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Madam Chair and Representative Smith, I think that let me use tobacco cessation as a piece. We cannot tell off of our claims data how many PEP members smoke. That's not, I mean, we can tell how many have diabetes. We can't tell how many smoke. And we do know we have Oregon population survey information, behavioral risk survey, so we think the PEP members are probably very close to what is we have statewide, which is 18% of adults smoke. We have one of the things we're trying to do with this survey that we have right now being fielded is to get a better sense of for how many PEP members actually do smoke. We do have national data that says for people who smoke, healthcare costs are 40% higher. We can't, because we can't first identify who actually smokes, and then we can't tie their medical costs to them. So we are assuming at this point PEP membership is very much like the rest of Oregon. When we selected this program, it was a scientifically based program. We will be able, when we have the results of this survey, which will be later this summer, to be able to get a better sense then of how many PEP members. We won't be able to go in, and there's confidentiality issues, and say, you know, member X, Y, and Z smoke, and here's their health care costs. But we could look at then, if you assume their costs are 40% higher, as some of the other studies have shown, then here's how much we should be able to reduce health care costs by for everyone who quits. So we have pieces of data and that we are bringing together that should allow us to get at some of those.
What I'm trying to do is look at the cost benefit, and let's take smoking.
Okay.
If the state of Oregon spends $1 million and we're hoping to affect 20,000 people, is it better to outreach this method, or is it better to say, hey, we have a $50 gift certificate for you to go buy Nicorette? How do we know the benefit we're gaining for the money we're spending?
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, I think that, again, as we get better data on the actual underlying risk factors in the PEP population, we'll be able to apply some types of studies to that. We did look at different programs, and we're not spending that amount of money on it, and I believe it's like $200 per participant for counseling and $160 per participant for the nicotine replacement therapy, but that the success rates are much higher than having someone go buy Nicorette. And so we did look at different programs and look at what the success rates were to try to put the program together that we thought had the best chance. As we look at issues like the health screenings and health education classes, what we can say is there's a large proportion of, I mean, a significant proportion of PEP members, probably not unlike the population as a whole, that either have chronic diseases where we are spending money. We have tracking on chronic, those who all have been identified as chronic diseases, and we track their medical claims, and we have programs in place through the carriers to do that. But the supporting of how do they make lifestyle changes, again, relying on the national studies, which both look at medical costs and absenteeism, until we get the results of this survey we're doing now, we really can't get at how much the PEB members are experiencing absenteeism or loss of productivity. But we can apply some of those national figures to the information we receive. And so we're really trying to
focus on areas that are shown to relate directly, whether it's weight issues, cholesterol issues, smoking issues, physical activity, that have been shown to contribute to health care costs or the lack thereof to control the health care costs.
Thank you. But none of these opportunities really go away. I can't pick up the paper that Providence isn't inviting me down to quit smoking or stop being fat. I just have to make the effort to get myself to Providence.
And, Madam Chair, I think that what we've tried to, and making the effort to go to Providence, well, we don't have Providence as a provider.
I shouldn't have used a specific brand name.
But we do by having services available on site at work sites. So we'll go to LaGrande, for instance, and there will be a collection of state agencies that are together. People can come in at the lunch hour to go through a health education class that really is around skill building. We're trying to have opportunities available that are, I guess, barrier-free. They're accessible. Employees can, they don't have to take time off of work or do it in the, or travel someplace across town or go on a Saturday. We want them accessible because the more likely they are to access this and to then utilize that information to make some of the lifestyle changes, the more likely it is we're going to be able to see our overall health care costs moderated. I don't know if we're ever going to see actually a decrease, but moderated in the long term. So it really, employer-based programs really are becoming more and more the norm. The public health did do focus groups with private employers earlier this year. They don't have quantitative data right now, but certainly the interest that was expressed there, number of employers saying this is the direction they want to move. Public health is doing a survey right now to get a better sense of employer-based wellness programs. But having those services and activities available on-site really does make a difference.
Thank you. I got out of the queue. Senator Morris and Senator Morissette and Representative Ivakian still thinking up his question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jean, everything that you have said, I concur. I agree. But in this environment in which we find ourselves, with revenue insufficient to meet so many pressing demands, in the way that I would prioritize this, it for me it doesn't rise to the level of a must include in our benefit package. And for that reason, not because I don't believe that it's efficacious, I think it is, but in the sense of in the near term here, at least in the next 2 years in this budget environment, I think it's something we need to seriously look at. Of suspending, and I, Madam Chair, members, panel, I would endorse the recommendation to eliminate this, at least suspend it, and hopefully we could bring it back in a different budget environment than what we find today. But I do want to thank you because I know, as an employer, I've been exactly where you're at, and we have had very aggressive wellness programs, and I think they are effective. But looking at the near-term problems we face, I think we just need to take a look at it.
Thank you, Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I disagree that we should suspend the program. I support the program as you presented it. I am a member, an advisory member of your board. I think that we fail to look at cost shifts and what we end up paying for not taking care of things up front. And those are the easiest programs to cut because we can ignore the results of it. They're just off the table, and we end up paying more in the long run. I guess ultimately I would hope that we could consider self-insurance. I know that there's a large startup cost to that, but we're working toward that, and there will be significant budget savings. But if we interrupt this program now, it'll have to, you know, whether or not we ever get it back, that's the promise. Oh, yeah, we'll bring it back when we have more funds. Well, that doesn't happen. You start over. So, and I'm speaking, the city of Springfield is self-insured under workers' comp. They have a wellness program. It's been very successful. and these are documentable. So I just want to continue this program. And I know that we have cybersecurity, we have a lot of things to do, but I'm tired of cutting the preventative programs. That's what we keep doing. And we ignore the cost shift that results from cutting these programs. So I do support your budget.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right, with that, Dallas, we'll move into your recommendations, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have before you my recommendations. I had to pencil in the correct numbers at the top. Recommendation is, starting again with the governor's recommended budget, would be to reduce other funds limitation by $14,594 for the PERS rate reduction and $4,444 for the Attorney General rate reduction. Recognizing a technical adjustment by increasing their other funds limitation by $211,750 to reflect the transfer of debt service that was residing in IRMD to the Public Employees Benefit Board. This is for the COPs issued for their benefit management system.
Question, Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Smith.
Thank you. I apologize. If I would have been here on time, I wouldn't be asking this question. The source of other funds is?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the source of other funds for this agency is, for a part of it is 0.06% of the amounts that are paid employers and employees, if there's a shift, for the benefits. So that's the administrative cost. Also, and we'll get into it with the non-limited. That's pretty much covers the limited portion, what currently is in the limited portion of the budget. I'm going to be recommending a shift from non-limited to expenditure limitation for expenditures that are funded by the $2.55 per month. The opt-out monies, when people have two insurance policies, they're allowed to opt out, and the amount that the employer pays is still the same, less the opt-out reimbursement to the employee. The difference between that amount goes into a pool of funds available for non-limited. And also then there is funds received from the insurers that are contracted with for the materials and cost of open enrollment. Correct me if I'm wrong. Those are the sources of revenues.
Just a quick
follow-up.
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. So those other funds, that 0.06 of 1%, really could be general fund or lottery dollars as well, because that's a fee for service. Not the right term, but we're assessing a fee from employees to pay into this.
And Madam Chair and Representative Smith, I think about 30-some percent is general fund because it comes from the agency.
Yes. Okay. So of the other fund, 30% is general.
30 to 35.
Yeah, that's just so I understand this for the future, how much of that would be, is that general fund and lottery fund?
Yes,
okay.
The lottery
fund
is a marginal piece.
Thank you.
Okay, please continue,
Dallas. My next recommendation is to transfer the $25,360,000-some-odd that currently is in the budget as non-limited. I explained what the sources of revenue were. To limitation. Now, let me explain what those monies are currently used for. The wellness program, administrative costs for the health, which kicks in, it's this year. You have an optional medical deferral where you can defer a part of your payroll or have it set aside and then reimburse you. The administrative costs of that, I can't remember the exact. Flexible spending accounts, and there are two types. One's for medical and one's for dependent care expenses. So the administrative costs of those are paid out. They're currently non-limited. Also, the administrative costs of open enrollment are non-limited. Also, there's what's called a subsidy or other uses to help defray the cost of medical insurance. All of those currently are expenditures that are not subject to limitation as proposed in the budget bill. Our recommendation is to move that so we would take out that exclusion in this budget bill and put them all under expense limitation or expenditure limitation. My next recommendation
Something to that. The primary, so you don't think we're spending $25 million on those kinds of services because that's a small set. That really is the stabilization fund, which is the source of reserves that we would have. Currently, we are contemplating some of the proposals we received assume self-insurance. And so if we do decide to do any self-funding, that is the source of reserves for if expenditures are over what would be projected, we would be paying in from those reserves to pay for claims costs. If they're under, then the savings would go into that stabilization fund as well. So that's the bulk of what would be in there. It's an estimate of, and that could change as we determine who our contractors are going to be and as we then actually move into the contracts with them.
My next recommendation, Madam Chair, is to reduce expenditure limitation, presuming you agree to move from non-limited to limited, then to reduce the expenditure limitation by $2,225,000 for cessation of the wellness program, effective January 1, 2006. The $2,225,000 is, or $2,225,000 is the best estimate of the revenues to come in and that would be spent on the wellness program out of the $2.55 per month per employee. The reduction here would then be reflected by reduction in other agencies' operating budgets for flexible benefits for the 2005-07 biennium. And we would notify those agencies as part of the other adjustments for reductions or savings in the Department of Administrative Services budget. With respect to the performance measures, there was a performance measure number 17 that they said really doesn't make sense. It had to do with keeping our costs at a certain or at the level that they are. So we're recommending deleting performance measure number 17 on your schedule.
Because that's completely beyond your ability to control.
It's, Madam Chair, it's the 0.6%, and it's been the same.
Yeah.
I mean, all you see is that same percentage.
And then except the performance measures number 16 and 18 that are in your summary schedule that were the agency's performance measure. So that in...
And those speak to average employee satisfaction with Fed benefit program and an annual survey on a scale of 1 to 10 and percentage of performance standards met by contractors.
That is correct.
Okay. Representative Smith.
I'm with you, Madam Chair, but I just want to make sure I understand this. Okay. On the non-limited other fund, the sources of those, again, approximately 30%-ish is general fund.
Of the what is currently the limited funds, which is...
The limited.
Which
okay, I just want to make sure I understand this, and I apologize for holding up, but I want to understand this. Okay, so the other funds, approximately 30%-ish, is general fund. On the non-limited other funds, what's the source of that income again?
The primary source is a portion of opt-out dollars. So if an employee has other group insurance available to them, it's actually at a reduced rate, they get 60%. 40% goes into the stabilization fund. And there are a few other interest on that thing, but that's the primary source.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. With that, the chair. Now that we have a quorum, and that should be noted for the record, the chair would entertain a motion to accept the legislative fiscal office recommendation.
So moved.
Representative Smith moves that we accept the LFO recommendation. Are there objections?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Morissette be noted as an objection. Other objections? Okay. So ordered. All right, Dr. Goldberg. One last appearance. We'll invite you back up to the table. We'll come back now that we have a quorum. And we have, Representative Smith, we have reviewed Dr. Goldberg's presentation. We have explored the three positions. We have had the explanation of the LFO recommendation. There was, in your absence, no particular questions raised about the LFO explanation. And I would now entertain a motion to accept the LFO recommendation with respect to the Office of Oregon Health Policy and Research.
So moved.
Senator Morissette moves the LFO recommendation. Is there objection? Without objection, so ordered. All right. Thank you very much.
Now, where do you want to go, Madam Chair?
What's your recommendation? Human Resources Division. We will invite Ms. Wilson. Prior to the committee acting on the recommendations, do you have any comments or additional information that you would like to add?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and just looking at the recommendations that we have, in looking at the recommendation of a benchmark, or the budget note relating to a benchmark for state employee compensation and benefit packages, I just wanted to let the committee know.
I'm sorry, Ms. Wilson, would you please identify yourself for the record?
Sorry.
I apologize.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Susan Wilson. I'm administrator of the Human Resource Services Division within Department of Administrative Services. And speaking to the potential budget note relating to a benchmark or benchmarks for compensation and benefit packages, I want to let the committee know that we have been having conversations with Senator Morse on this. We welcome the opportunity to try to, in some way, explain and quantify this very large and very diverse workforce that we have in state government and find a meaningful comparison with the private sector and other areas. And we'll continue to use this as a tool to try to explain that.
Let me interrupt you at this point and say that Senator Morse has distributed the framework for his budget note. At this moment, we have not received a co-chair sign-off on this, so if we act on this, Dallas, correct me if I'm wrong, we could conceptually approve the budget note awaiting co-chair approval and further refinement?
Madam Chair, just like yesterday with Controller's Division, yes.
Okay. Is that acceptable to you, Senator? All right. Director Warner.
I don't believe we've seen the budget.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It might be helpful.
I apologize.
The concept. Okay.
Oh, this folks already agree.
Yeah.
The concept.
Get them while they agree.
Madam Chair,
thank
I'm
you.
Guessing what we just did right now was not
we'll
our action in accepting it.
That's
yeah.
correct.
Okay.
Madam Chair, for the record, while they're reading the statement, just to be clear, since you're approving this in concept, my understanding is that LFO staff would work with budget management and agency staff, as well as obviously the senator and the rest of the committee, to ensure that we're all comfortable with the language of the budget note. Is that the?
That is exactly correct. In addition, I believe that co-chair Scott has been briefed and co-chair Schrader has not. And absent co-chair sign-off on the exact language, we cannot move forward with the inclusion of the budget note. But at this juncture, we are talking about panel approval to continue to move the concept forward for agency and refinement and co-chair sign-off.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, let me ask a question, if I may, since we're trying to hone the conceptual nature of this. The use of the word equilibrium in the first, it is important that the state maintain equilibrium with the private sector, and then continues after that to describe comparison of rates of growth and expressing those as a ratio. And I want to clarify whether the intent is to find is to establish benchmarks that illustrate that the state is equal in salary and benefits to the private sector, or whether it's just equal in its rate of growth to that of the private sector. Meaning, the private sector may have positions that carry stock options, other types of things that aren't provided in state government, higher salary, more benefits. And I don't want to trap us into that type of a definition of equality.
Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Vaughan, I think your points are well taken. The intent of using the word equilibrium was that if the state is too far out of balance one way or the other, and this goes both ways, then you wind up with a situation, on the one hand, difficulty attracting quality people. On the other hand, difficulty in supporting, asking taxpayers to support government if that equilibrium is out of balance. And that's the intent of using that word. With respect to the other two issues, one is in measuring the rate of growth, I think it's important to have a historical perspective so that you're not just taking one snapshot in time, but have we kept pace with the private sector, or have we exceeded the rate of growth of increase in the private sector? Then the other issue is one of just absolute equity in current dollars. As a ratio, are we above or below? And we don't know that, and we're approving a budget that involves millions and millions of dollars, but we don't know how that compares to the private sector. And if we collectively do not have the confidence of the private sector in building these budgets, that there is a sense of equity, the equilibrium issue, then we wind up with huge problems. And I believe this is fairly significant in terms of having this information crafted in a way that, number one, is thoughtful. And I do appreciate the information that was provided in the meeting that we had. It became very obvious that to craft a measurement right now today would be impossible to do. We could do it, but it would not be thoughtful. It wouldn't be thorough, because what you need to do is make certain that you're comparing apples to apples, and you're not taking one sector and comparing it to a sector that isn't even close. So that's the intent of this, is to craft something that hopefully will give us good information and allow us to make better informed decisions in terms of how we allocate. For example, we have a recommended $130 million reservation for what may be the outcome of collective bargaining. We don't know. Is that the right number collectively? The analysis may have been made, but I think that to have this kind of data is absolutely essential to make better choices. And in all respects, you know, we need to be fair employers, good employers, and the intent of this is not to find ways to beat up on public employees, because it goes both ways. If we are out of balance, if we do have employees on food stamps, I mean, that's not the way we want to be. We don't want to be that kind of an employer either. So that's the intent of this, and hopefully it will find approval with the co-chairs in this committee.
Representative Smith.
Chair Johnson, Senator Morris, I think you're right on this. I think this is an important first step. And I think it'll provide tremendous benefit to all of us. With that said, in Eastern Oregon, we call this herding cats. And I think you're going to have a fun time with this one, trying to set the parameters in which everyone can agree on what does constitute compensation, and even more important, what constitutes fairness. With that said, I also think if there's anyone in this building who could pull that off, it'll be you. And so I look forward to seeing this.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think for us, we would like to be able to tell this story better so that folks understood it on both sides, both the union side, who thinks they're undercompensated most of the time, and for you as members of the legislature to be able to support, and us to be able to tell the public. So we're committed to that. I think we need to look at this language with you. If we're not actually adopting this language, but conceptually these notions, I think we're fine, and we'll work with you on that. We did have issues. We talked with Senator Morris about the data sets that would need to be used. We can't tell you today that we have one that exactly meets this, and that's something we need to work on. If we engage third-party resources to assist in the development of that, we haven't identified how much that might cost us to do, so we would need to be able to talk with you about that, I think, if it's any kind of significant dollars that we don't currently have planned for in the budget.
Yeah, one more, Madam Chair.
Senator Vodka.
And I want to compliment the Senator on your thoughtfulness in your approach to the issue here. What I'm trying to hone down, I suppose, is also how this relate. What is the performance that we are trying to measure? Is the performance one of just gathering the data and how well the agency does that, or is the performance trying to encourage the agency to achieve some type of equality in salary and benefits to that of the private sector. And I guess without belaboring even more, but I guess that then poses the question of, in your apples and oranges analysis, you know, what kind of fruit do we want to create within the state? Do we want to have salary and benefits that's equal with the private sector, or do we want to have something different? And does this performance measure lend that kind of analysis to be done? So I'm trying to get a handle on how your good work here in collecting all the data, what it is we're trying to accomplish through performance in this agency with that.
Senator Morrison.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I can only express it in terms of my perspective as an employer, and that is that we always wanted to be competitive. We never wanted to be the low-cost, low-ball. We wanted good benefits. We wanted a good environment. And we wanted good compensation. We need to be competitive. If we're not competitive in the public sector, then it reflects in the quality of employees that we retain. If we are overcompensating, then you wind up with the private sector rebelling and not supporting state government. And so that's why I think that in terms of the parity, if you could express it as a percentage of, you know, whatever the index is and whatever the public sector compares to that, it might be a 0.83, it might be a 1.13 or 1.7, so that we know historically how we're benchmarking against the progression of, you might say, wealth within our state. That would be my vision of what we would accomplish.
Senator Morsett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think what you're suggesting has great merit. As long as you compare similar job descriptions, because that's going to be the difficulty. I'm not sure that the same types of jobs would exist in each of the sectors that we're comparing. So we would have to do a lot of footnoting and if we get into those. Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Got to throw my piece into this. Again, I fully support this. It also is a regional issue. An administrative assistant position in Salem is the equivalent of a professional position in Hepner.
Okay. Any other comments, either Director Warner or Ms. Wilson?
Madam Chair, only that we'll be happy to work with staff and with the committee on trying to come up with something that we think is meaningful.
Thank you very much. Then I'm going to ask the professional staff to go through their recommendations.
Sure, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Of course, our recommendation, we have a reduction to other funds by $54,227 for the PERS rate reduction and another $13,908 for the Attorney General rate reduction. We're recommending also the transfer of non-limited expenditure authority to expenditure limitation of $2,323,803. This is principally training funds and recruitment, if they perform recruiting things, and there's some other job-related transfer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, most of that money, a lot of that money, actually is money that was set aside for our maintenance of our legacy system in other funds. And also, largely, it then also comes from special training programs that we hold when we are requested to do so, and then we collect from the agencies for that.
Representative Smith.
I apologize for digressing, but I just turned to this page. On page 10 of Human Resource Service Division are the goals, and one is to maintain equitable classification and compensation plans, and Senator Morris is right on the mark. If we're going to make that goal more than a bunch of nice big words, we ought to have something to back it up. Sorry for taking us back to that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, my next recommendation is with regard to the performance measures. We accept our performance measures presented at numbers 6 and 7 on the schedule, which briefly have to do with maintaining annual turnover rate in the workforce, and then the racial ethnic diversity of our workforce. So those are those two performance measures. I would recommend accepting those. And also the division had said they'd like to revise or review number 8 as to this had to do with quality of the workforce, a percentage of state managers that need a certain quality, and they didn't have those benchmarks yet. They had nothing to measure against, so they'd like the opportunity to review that and revisit it and come back to the audit committee with that in August of 06. Along with them, they expressed the desire to develop one or two performance measures relating to the work that they're involved with statewide, which is reconciling the PERS eligibility, retirement eligibility, and data now because of the new system in place and the role that they're taking, they're undertaking. So I would recommend that they be supported, directed to do that, and also return August of 06 to the audit committee. Then my last recommendation, of course, is a generic. This is my language I tried to get for the conceptual budget. Recommend the co-chair's approval budget note with respect to setting the benchmark or benchmarks for state employees' compensation and benefit packages. And my rationale was so that legislators and the public could better understand and assess the budget proposals and other state employee compensation benefits. The reason I put that in there is that we're kind of precluded from going policy direction, which we just want to be able to assess the how we're budgeting and what we're getting for the dollars spent, I think, is where we're heading when you're talking the compensation.
Okay. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I'm prepared to go wherever you need to go on this budget with one shot across the bow of the boat for next session, and that relates to racial and ethnic diversity in the state workforce as a percentage of the statewide civilian labor force. There's a significant discrepancy between the minorities in the labor force versus what the state of Oregon employs. I'm not asking for any special treatment of any class of citizen, but I do believe every Oregonian has a right to be fairly selected or evaluated in their opportunities to work for the state of Oregon, and I think that especially is true in rural Oregon, where I don't think that's the case. And so I'm ready to go with you, but please take that as a shot across the bow, because in 2 years, I will be looking at that. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments about the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendations? Okay, I would entertain a motion to accept the LFO recommendations for Human Services Human Resources Services Division.
So moved.
Moved. Any objection? Approved. All right, thank you. Dallas, you have a recommendation for where we might want to go next.
If we get through facilities, Madam Chair, there's a reduction in square footage for uniform rent that we could pass on to other agencies.
Great. Let's then invite facilities forward.
I'm not going to put the director off it until the tail end.
Good morning. State your name for the record, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Foster. I'm the Administrator of the Facilities Division of the Department of Administrative Services.
Good morning, Mr. Foster. I think at this point you've had the opportunity to review the LFO recommendations. I would invite any comments you'd like to make before the panel begins their deliberations.
Madam Chair, I think we have looked that over, and I believe, you know, there are maybe some minor issues about moving utility fees to non-limited, but nothing that we couldn't live with.
Okay, thank you. I think we've had a quorumectomy.
And that is a new one.
I'm going to ask Dallas to go through your recommendations, and I'm going to go out in the hall and try to rustle up our quorum.
Members of the committee remaining. my recommendation is the standard one is, this is all other funded agency, and this would be to reduce other funds by $123,963 for the PERS rate reduction and another $11,223 for the Attorney General rate reduction. Also transfer $39 million and some odd dollars of other funds, non-limited authority, to expenditure limitation. I've given you my reasoning for that previously. Also, that we acknowledge the reduction they proposed because of savings that occurred when they weren't aware of it during development of the budget, a reduction of uniform rent space for office by 8 cents per square foot per month to reflect savings and other adjustments that weren't in the original uniform rent had been approved by the emergency board over a year ago for this biennium. That would that total reduction amounts to about $3.2 million to state agencies in using residing in uniform rent buildings. Again, we would pass this out and make those adjustments in every other agency's budget that, for those that reside in uniform rent buildings.
I would like to acknowledge Mr. Foster for his leadership in doing this and bringing it forward to the legislature at a time when we're struggling in your agency to find efficiencies as and use those efficiencies to fund other initiatives. I think this is very useful.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Then my recommendations with respect to performance measures is accept performance measure number 3, which was has to do with the uniform rent being less than the market. That's what the target. It's on your summary schedule there. Uniform rent as a percent of private. They try to keep it below market. Then delete number 4, as this is already being done now that we've transferred the operations and responsibilities of the Capital Planning Commission to the Facilities Division. So number 4 to be deleted. And the division said we'd like to explore, develop a composite measure or measures for the division, for facilities, specifically for the division, and report to the Audit Committee by August of 2006. So that would be our recommendation with respect to this division.
Any questions for the professional staff? That there being none, the chair would entertain a motion to accept the LFO recommendation with respect to the Facilities Division. So Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation with respect to the Facilities Division. Are there objections? Hearing none, it is approved. Thank you very much. We will now move to the Director's Office. Madam Director.
Let me ask you something with respect to the memo you have. It says Director's Office dash only, and I just wanted to say that the reason I put that there was during phase one, the Director's Office included a discussion of the Progress Board's operation and an overview and discussion of the Director's Office. And the recommendations here and the budget of the Director's Office do not include the Progress Board. That will be taken up later.
Okay.
So in case anyone thought that.
I think that's very helpful. Thank you. Director Warner, you've had a chance to look at these recommendations from the Legislative Fiscal Office. Any comments prior to the panel's deliberations?
No, Madam Chair, I don't.
Okay. Dallas, if you'd go through your recommendations, please.
Surely, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, we've got a reduction here, some general fund of $1,036 for the PERS rate reduction, and reduce the other funds by $19,946 for PERS, again, for the savings, and $11,300 for the reduction in the Attorney General rate. Also, a net reduction of other funds by $164,053 to reflect two movements of transfers of personnel. One in from Information Resources Management Division, that was a communications person, and one position, the budget management directors, out to budget management. The net of that is a reduction of 164,000, zero positions, zero FTE effect, and we reflected those movements in the budgets of the other, or proposed to in IRMDs, and we have done so in budget management. And then accept performance measures numbers 2 and 12. These, and I believe 2, it has to do with the Office of Economic Analysis, which resides in the Director's Office. This is the Director's Office. The satisfaction with the department. And number 12 is the one of that has to do with the Office of Economic Analysis. And the reliability, those who are on the council who rank the reliability of the economic forecast between good and excellent.
Representative Smith.
Do you want me to hold my questions? I have about four questions.
Nope, I would invite you to take them without coming to the chair for follow-up.
Okay. Really quick, I'm going back to the notes I had from round one. Can you send this group a list of all the different departments and agencies that get internal audits, who have internal auditors?
Might not say anyone over 100 million. I believe that was part of the phase one questions and should be in your appendix.
So I have a list of all the departments?
Yes, I don't know what page that might be on. But you had asked that question, I think, in phase one. And so there is in your appendix, there should be a list in the back of the agencies and which positions they have that are internal auditors.
The follow-up question on that is there a frequency of the audits? Are they required to conduct them every quarter, every year? How does that work?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, each agency's internal audit shop would do what we call a risk assessment, and then they would plan out their work for the year based on their high risk areas, and so they would be conducting audits in accordance with their risk plan.
How would this body know when a risk assessment is conducted?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the agency does a risk assessment, should be doing a risk assessment annually or biennially, so they have them on file.
It's as simple as just giving them a call?
Yeah. Okay. If you want to look at their risk assessment, I'm sure Dallas wants to say something here.
Dallas?
Yeah, add something to that, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The Joint Legislative Audit Committee has gotten a little more involved statewide, I think, with the role of the internal audit function, and so it's providing a little bit of a legislative direction and a looping of information through that during the interim. That's an informational anecdotal piece of information.
The two other quick things is one of the notes I had was you had made mention that State Fair had failed to make its bond payment. Have they made that bond payment yet?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, they resolved that issue, yes, with the treasurer.
And then the last question I have is can you share with this group one more time how you're going to handle the vacancy of the deputy director position?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we had this interesting discussion because of the changeover in director and deputy and DAS. Actually, it is not the deputy. I'm in the deputy position. I am the acting, and it's the director position that is currently vacant and has been.
When you're appointed director, what's the plan for the deputy director position?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the governor has not yet determined who's going to be appointed as the DAS director. I'm in the acting role, and so until that decision is made, I couldn't answer you in terms of how the other position would necessarily be filled.
The reason I ask this question is as we look at vacancies, and that becomes fungible money every month that position is not funded. And so I'm just curious how much longer will fungible money be sitting there?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I cannot speak for the governor's office in terms of when he is going to choose to make that particular appointment. Right now, I actually have appointed Bill Fink, the operations manager, division administrator, as the acting deputy director while we wait for that decision.
I think you're worthy of being director. So,
Dallas, please.
I was just going to say, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that I, too, had looked at that position, and the operations of the department, as diverse as they are, I think really need a deputy position to help with the director.
Okay. Any other questions about the LFO recommendations? There being none, the chair would entertain a motion to accept the legislative fiscal officer's recommendations with respect to the director's office only, exclusive of any discussion of the progress board.
So moved.
Representative Smith moves the LFO recommendation for only the director's office. Is there objection? There being none, it's approved. Thank you, Madam Acting Director. At this point, the only other piece that we have scheduled is the facilities division capital improvements, and I think given the lack of clarity around some of those issues that and only 10 minutes left for the committee, I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the chair and set that discussion off for later. Any comments from the committee? Okay. There being no other business to come before the committee and no other comments for the committee, I am going to close the... Oops. We have one other piece of business, and that's at your places was the schedule for next week. And just to make sure that it's part of the record, public testimony on the Department of Revenue on Monday. And I believe that they will have a presentation from the counties discussing the assessment portion of the Department of Revenue's budget. On Tuesday, we're also scheduled for Department of Revenue, and on Wednesday, we will schedule these as public hearings and possible work sessions. And then on Thursday, we will deal with the Board of Tax Practitioners' public testimony. And so there being no additional questions or comments from the committee, I am going to close the work session on Senate Bill 5501, the Department of Administrative Services, and declare us adjourned until Monday morning at 8:30.
Thank you.